Anna Reed, we were talking about your work. So you retired, you said, in 1983.
83.
When did your husband retire?
Lance retired early. He retired in 1980. We retired in 1980.
What types of pensions were you getting out of the university then?
When Lance died, his retirement, he had a retirement check and his Social Security. I got Social Security. But at my job, I didn't get Social Security. I got it from before I started working there, which wasn't very much, because after you work for the federal government so long, you pay into it, into your annuity check. So my annuity check was pretty good. I would consider it.
Actually, although you were working at the university, your employment was through USDA, so you were not technically a university employee.
Right, I wasn't. But he was a university employee. So.
How long after you started work was it before there were any other black employees in the office?
Long time. I was the only one for years and years, and in my department, but there were two departments. Walter Dorsey came from Texas here, and he was the first black. Well, I'd call him a state. They call him station leaders. He came, and for about a year, and then after that, they moved him from Texas here, and then after that, they had a lot of black workers in his department, but in my department, I was the only one for a long time. And then when I retired, we had some Orientals in our department. And when I retired, they got two black girls working in there after I retired. But I was the only one for a long time. I guess I was token, considered a token.
How did that feel?
I didn't like my being a token, but I needed a job, and I was glad I had the job. But I did my work, and we did a lot of training for students who were in textile. We had classes, and they'd come in, especially Dr. Marvin. He liked to bring his kids in for, I think it got him out of doing some teaching that morning, and he'd bring them in, and we'd show them how to work the computerized machinery and do the samples, and we made what was called an array, and that gave you every inch and everything about a bale of cotton. And it took you about an hour to do one. And you did that by hand. That was the only thing we did by hand. Everything else was done by machinery. And then you'd lay them out on a board and measure the tuft that you pulled. And at the end, went through this long calculation. And you winded up with how long the cotton, how much the cotton was worth and all. So we did classes on that. About twice a week, we had textile classes. And it didn't bother me being a token. I knew that's what I was, but it didn't bother me.
Oh, you were more than a token, you were a pioneer.
Yeah, and I was getting some money. I was getting the money that I needed to send my daughter to college and to pay for a house and a car.
Well, you got the opportunity, I believe, to be the first black in another capacity at Clemson.
What was that?
Board of Visitors.
Oh yeah, right, yeah.
When did you start on that?
That was let's see, I had been to California. That was after my husband died. So it must have been 88, 89, because I served 2 years, and it's 91. So it must have been 89, 88, 88 and 89.
Am I right that you were the first black person on the Board of Visitors?
I was. Yes, I was the first black.
There weren't that many women either, were there?
No, but still not. I have a picture in here now, and there's about three women on there. And still, they don't have many women. Let me show you my picture. See that again?
You said there was only one Blake trustee. That's on the Board of Trustees.
On the Board of Trustees.
And this photograph is uh, 17 white men, two white women, and you.
Mm-hmm. I was taken on the steps of Serene. Serene Hall.
Well, you've had a lot of very good opportunities to lead the way. On another occasion, you and I have talked about another first black at Clemson, Harvey Gant.
Right.
How did you get to know him?
Harvey came when there were nobody else over there but Harvey. And he sort of, he stole the hearts of everybody, all the black people in the community. And he started walking over here on weekends. And we'd fix dinner for him, and he'd go to church with us. He even sang on the choir down there at the time. And I had a teenage daughter, you know, but they were just like friends. They weren't dating, because neither had a little boyfriend. And Harvey would spend the weekends over here, and he'd come. He'd go in that back room and then shut the door and study. And he would get called. I don't know how they would find out that he was here, but magazine, at that time it was the Look magazine, and they would call here. And he wouldn't talk to them. He said, no, I'm not going to talk. He said, when I hear what I've said, it won't even sound like what I've told you. Mm-hmm. And so then after that, Lucinda came, and she and Anita were around about the same age. And they were friends, of course, and she and Harvey would come over here and date, you know. And finally they wind up and they got married. So we keep in touch with them. I went to a wedding last summer, Anita and I did. His daughter got married. We hear from them often. And then about 2 months ago, Harvey had a distinguished award presented to him over in Holcomb's Dining Hall. And we were his guests, Anita and I. And her husband.
You told me once about his breaking one of your...
Yeah, my chandelier in the living room. It was brand new. We hadn't been in the house long when he came. And we were gone that afternoon, and they were dancing in there. And we came back, and Harvey was nowhere to be seen. And we said, where's Harvey? And nobody didn't say anything much. So finally I looked up and the chandelier was down. Mm-hmm. And he was dancing and doing a jitterbug or something and threw Lucinda over his head and broke the light. Mm-hmm. So he was hiding in the closet.
That would not have been very good public relations first campaign, would it?
So he paid his fee. He said, I'm going to give you some money to get it back. He said, for my dad to send me some money. He said, I'm going to get you another one. He said, please. Lauren said, no, don't worry about it. So don't worry about it, Harvey. And we laughed about it after it was over, but he was afraid. He was scared we were going to fuss.
Maybe we should get this on the record. Where was Harvey from?
Charleston, South Carolina.
Now, just a few houses down below you are some Gants. He was no relation to these people,
was he? No relation at all.
Totally different. Mm-hmm. How did his wife wind up at Clemson?
She said, after Harvey integrated it and everything, she graduated. She was a little girl from Hopkins, South Carolina, a good student in math. And she applied to Clemson. And she said it was the reason, because she knew he was here all along, she said. And she said she applied, and they accepted her. And she was a smart student. She didn't graduate because they got married before she graduated, but she did go on. After he moved to Charlotte and in an architecture building, she went on back to, Chapel Hill. I think she graduated from Chapel Hill. I'm not sure, but anyway, she graduated in accounting.
What was her name?
Lucinda Brawley.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. When you said she came here because of him, I take it you mean because he had integrated the college, right, rather than that she had plans to marry him ahead of time.
No, because she had never seen him, you know, but had read about him like everybody else, you know. But I don't think it was any marriage plans in it or anything. But I guess she figured that just the two of them being here, they'd get together, you know.
But she's gotten relatively little publicity considering she was the first black female
she has,
at the university.
Right. Well, she was with him the other night over there, and he said, I think the admitting office did a real good job of admitting my wife. So isn't she beautiful? And he said she was beautiful then, and she is now. And that was all he said about it, you know. He said they made a good choice when they admitted her. So she does, and she's not in the limelight, and she doesn't want to be, I don't think. She's sort of laid back.
Although you're retired, you certainly don't seem very idle.
I'm not. I'm busy, busy. I'm making an Afghan now for my first great-grandchild, if I ever, and I don't even have one. So my granddaughter is here Saturday. And she said, Grandmama, who do you think it's going to be? And she says, not me. So I said, well, I don't know, but I'm making Afghans for my great-grandchildren. I hope I live to see one. I'm trying to give them a hint to get married, you know. But
you stay very active at your church.
Yeah, I'm active in my church. I'm secretary of my church. And at the Child Development Center, I'm on the board, executive board out there. And we're in the process of remodeling. We bought some buildings from Duke Power, from Bad Creek, when they were building those, the Duke Power Company up there. And we're getting those buildings, modules, at a real low price, and we're going to move them out there and take down all of the buildings we have out there. And I'm working with that.
You said you were working at the family reunion?
My family reunion and doing all that kind of stuff.
I would imagine, as a well-educated, capable person in touch with university and informed about what's going on, you've also gotten lots of additional chores with people in the community wanting you to help them with this, that, or the other.
I have. I work with the nurse in the nursing center of university. We meet there, but we meet every 2 months we meet. And then I come back. It's kind of like an input to the community from the nursing center as to what services they can get. And then I work with the voting registration.
And I also gather that you probably help lots of people with just some of their personal financial papers, whether it's credit cards or income tax. Mm-hmm. Or
I was a notary public until October, and I forgot to renew my, I'm not that anymore, but I did a lot of notarizing papers and things for people who were buying cars and stuff like that. And I try to do the best I can with the older people. And I also haul them to the doctors. And they know I'm here, you know, but I tell them, I just let me know a couple of days ahead of time, because I'll probably be gone somewhere. And, you know, when they have to go for treatments and things like that. And I give them 2 or 3 hours of my time.
Something that struck me at the time, and I never commented on it, you told me a year ago that you had all the directions and plans for your Aunt Cindy's funeral.
Mm-hmm.
She actually was your husband's aunt,
right.
Not yours.
Not mine.
And yet she wanted you to have this, and she trusted you to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Sure did. She was a sweet person. She was something like my mother, you know, because my mother died earlier. And she sort of took me under her wing. She was always giving me advice and giving my husband advice. And she had written the songs out that she wanted to play at her funeral.
Well, that seemed to be typical of the way lots of other people have learned that they can lean on you and depend on you to get things done. Her name, by the way, was Lucinda Reed Brown, mm-hmm. just so we've got that on the record. Why don't we go back then and talk about your mother and the years before you got to Clemson. Tell me first your mother's name.
My mother's name was Sene, S-E-N-N-I, Sene Caroline Henderson, before she married my father.
And his name was?
And his name was Edward Wilkes.
Do you remember when your mother was born?
My mother was born in 1885, because I was thinking the other day that she would have been well over 100, I guess, she lived. 1885. Yeah, she would have been.
And when did she die?
She died in 67 or 66. 67 one.
Your father, where was he born?
My father was born in Oconee County.
And when?
And my mother was a year older than my father. So he must have been 1884.
When did he die?
He died about 5 years before my mother died. And he was diabetic. And we always thought my mother would have gone first because my mother she fell and broke her hip. And now they call it Alzheimer's, but then they said she was senile. You know, she got to the place she couldn't remember things. And my father, before we realized it, he was struggling, the mother, you know, trying to do, because after the 10 children they had all gone from home, they were there by themselves. There were 10 of us, sometimes 12 with a cousin or two around. And so when she fell and broke her hip, we found out that Mama was in worse shape than, you know, we thought. And everybody was gone from here up north except me and another brother of mine. So, so we brought her. I brought her. She stayed with me. And then she stayed with my brother a while. And my father was diabetic. We thought the mother would have gone first. But I don't know what happened. He had a heart condition, too, after that. And he just got suddenly sick one day and died. And so Mama was left alone. And she lived about 5 years after he died.
You said he was from Oconee County. What mm-hmm. part?
And my mother was from down by Fairplay, South Carolina. And my mother was from down in Avery, too. But my grandfather and those lived. I used to go visit them every summer. And they lived at what's called Fairplay in Townville.
What set of grandparents is this?
I stayed with my mother's grandparents, my mother's parents. But my father's grandparents died before I remembered them at all.
What were your mother's parents' names?
They're Hennets. My grandmother was named Harriet Henderson. Mm-hmm. Now, and my grandfather was Green Henderson. Mm-hmm. And they lived in a little log cabin down at between Townville and Fairplay, South Carolina.
Do you remember what Harriet's family name was?
She was a Davis. Mm-hmm. Harriet Davis.
And what about your father's parents' names?
My father's parent, his father was William Wilkes. Mm-hmm. And my grandmother was Hannah Dean.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any idea when any of your grandparents were born?
My grandfather on my father's side were just a little bit beyond slavery. His parents were enslaved. My mother, on my mother's side, my grandmother, she would tell us about slavery, you know, but she was a child. Mm-hmm. But they weren't enslaved, but her parents were, and she'd tell us things about it.
What types of stories did you hear when you were young about slavery?
Mm-hmm. About how they make up these songs, you know, like Steal Away and all that. And she'd tell us about on the weekends when they would meet. They weren't allowed to meet publicly unless there was a white man in the crowd, you know, for fear they would be, I guess, talking about escaping.
What were they meeting for?
Just meeting to have religious services and things. They believed in church and going to church. And sometimes, most of the times, during the, those who worked in the homes, in the houses and things like that, were considered a little above the ones who were the field workers. But they would all get together. You know, even though they were thought that they were a little bit more, the ones who worked in the houses and things, they could go to church with their masters and things to take care of the children and things. But they'd have those meetings, she said, they'd all come together. They were all on one common bond.
Did you hear much about whether or not the slaves, and particularly any of your family, would be regularly going to the church on Sunday along with the masters.
I'd hear my grandmother say that. Those the house boys and the house girls and the women who worked in the house would go to church with the masters.
The others didn't. Mm-mm. Did any of these people as slaves know how to read or write?
My grandmother knew how, but she was taught, I guess, just by, you know, being smart enough to learn herself. But my mother had a third grade education, and my mother could read and write as good as I can, and could spell.
Even though she had only three grades?
Even though she, uh-huh.
Well, let's go back to your grandmother. Did she learn to read and write after the end of the Civil War and freedom, or before?
You know, when I knew my grandmother, she could read and write, and I've known her since I was about 6 years old. I can remember from then, because she, every time my mama would have a baby, she'd come and stay with us, and she could read and write then.
What other types of stories did you hear about slavery?
Some of them were gruesome.
Yeah, tell us.
But when they would beat them, they get whipping, get lashings, and just for nothing.
You came along fairly late, but were there still people around that you would see that had marks on their back from the whippings?
No, I've never seen that. I guess I was among the fortunate ones that I must have known some people who had been enslaved, like Mr. Hawthorne. He was an older man who lived near us, and he would tell us about slavery and stuff. But I never saw anybody who had been beaten.
What types of stories would he tell?
He was a cook. He cooked, and he would talk about how he would slip food out for them, for the others who didn't get food. And they lived in these little shanty houses with no wood floors, ground floor, dirt floors. And
did they have a fireplace?
Fireplace, yeah. Wood stove.
Do you know where he was a slave?
I really don't. I don't know.
Around here?
It must have been, because he was, it must have been Georgia, because he was from Georgia. As a child, he brought up in Georgia.
What was his first name?
Mr. Hawthorne. I always called him Mr. Hawthorne. What was his name? But his wife was named Rock, so that was his second wife.
Did he live in Westminster when you were growing up, or that area?
Mm-hmm. He lived up there near us. What was his name? Will Hawthorne? I think it was Will. Will Hawthorne. He's dead now. Been dead 7 years.
Some of the things we hear about slavery are also about sexual exploitation of the females by their masters. Did you hear many stories about that type of thing?
I didn't hear many stories, but I saw some kids that looked white, and I knew that there had to be somebody white in that family, and I know these black people who had them, and I know it had to be white.
Were they were older than you?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We had a neighbor, Mrs. Harris, and you can tell her from a white person, her children. She had one son, Willie, and his father was brown skin color, had nice hair. And Willie looked like a white boy, but that was just because his mother was so white. And my father-in-law had blue eyes and red hair. So I know there must have been somebody white in that family, a Caucasian somewhere. But
did these people ever talk about it?
No, they didn't.
Did your father-in-law ever say anything about where his...
Well, he always assumed that his father-in-law, I mean, his father, and that his grandfather was a white man, but he never knew who it was.
Did he have any idea who?
He thought it was... he always said... He said, they always tell my little like Cotton Ed Smith. So I don't know whether that was his grandfather or not. But Butler Reed was his father, and Butler was smart. He had a store. He owned most all the property over in this area of Calhoun. It was called Calhoun then. And he was whiter than my father-in-law. Mm-hmm. But he married a real black woman, and I think you have a picture of her.
Mm-hmm.
And so the children, what makes me know that he was white, because all the children are fair skin with straight hair.
With somebody...
Even the grandchildren. Lance's sisters were fair, real fair, and had straight hair.
With somebody like Mrs. Harris, would a woman like her have the opportunity to pass if she wanted to?
She could have. Mm-hmm. She really could have.
Did you ever know her or other people to do that?
I know some people in Seneca who did the Dolls. They lived on Oak Street. They went to Washington, and I think they're still passing some of them.
Up there? They didn't do it in Seneca?
No, they didn't do it in Seneca. No, because the parents would always be black, you know, and they couldn't pass. But they'd leave here and pass.
Mm-hmm. One of the fairly light families in the area, I understand, that were able to pass was the Haywoods over at Central. Did you know them?
Susan Haywood? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know them. I've been to that house. They got a big old pretty house over there. Nobody lives in it now, I don't think.
Were they people who were able to pass?
I don't know. They weren't that fair, but they were wealthy, well off. And Haywood, the man, was my mother-in-law's uncle, Harrison Haywood. That was my mother-in-law's uncle. And when they were orphaned as children, he raised them on that big farm in that great big house. They had about 10 to 12 rooms in it.
There's a fascinating story you probably know about Harrison Haywood lynching a white man who had raped his daughter.
Right. Sure do. I remember him talking about that. Mm-hmm.
Let's go back to Westminster. You said you were from a farm. Was it very far out of the town?
About 2 miles out of Westminster.
Your parents, you said, were from both around Fairplay and Townville. Did they meet and get married there?
Yeah, they were married in Townville, somewhere down there. And their parents were sharecroppers. And they both came in big families. My father and my father's family, there were 14 boys and girls. And my mother, on my mother's side, there must have been about 8 or 9. Both of them came from big families. And none of us have that many children in our family. None of us.
Oh, you said your mother got a third grade education.
Right.
Do you know where she went to school?
I guess down at Fairplay, little one-room school. My father could read and write, too. And I don't think he went any farther than my mother. But they both could read and write.
Why or how did they move up toward Westminster?
I don't know if you remember here, I'm talking about the Merritts family. They owned farms and things, and my father sharecropped until we were big children. I guess I must have been about to graduate from high school. My father was sharecropping. And after that, I had 4 brothers to go into the armed services. And there were 6 boys, and the 4 of them went into the armed services.
Did they go into the services because of World War II or earlier?
World War II. And they stayed. And after they came out back home, none of them were married then either. They came back home, and my father bought 10 acres of land, and there was a house on it. And that's where we lived until they both died. And then I had 2 brothers and a sister younger than me. And they all lived there until they got married.
When your father was sharecropping, from the time he first moved to Westminster, that must have been sometime around 1920 or maybe
somewhere
a little bit earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Did he share crop for the same family all the time?
Right, the same man, marriage. And he was, I remember I was living in a big house. Mm-hmm. Had to be with 10 children in it. And we had a barn, we had two mules that we kept all night. I didn't know we were sharecropping until I got a big girl. And we had cows, pastures, the pastures with the cows. And if we were ever poverty stricken, I didn't know it because we had always had a lot of food. We had gardens. And I remember us taking cotton to the gin. My father would take his own cotton to the gin and have it gin and get his share of the money out of it. And then give Mr. Merritt his, I guess.
Let's stop just a minute and pick up another tape.